Day Player on 720 WGN. Grammy Award winner and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Bill Medley has been entertaining us for nearly six decades. As a member of the Righteous Brothers, their first big hit was You've Lost That Love and Feeling, a song that holds the distinction of being the most played song in U.S. radio history. And after countless hits and performances over the years, the Righteous Brothers are appearing at the venue at the Horseshoe on Saturday, July 29th. And to share his legendary story is Bill Medley himself. Welcome in, Bill.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, just hearing your voice, giving me the chills, my friend.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, in a good way. Just a legendary voice.
I'll try and clear it up.
No, it sounds fantastic. You have such a legendary voice. And I know, you know, just by reading about you and reading your book that you put out, music ran in your family at a very early age. Your parents had a band, didn't they?
Yeah, my mom was from Los Angeles. My dad was a Texan, and he played the sax. My mom played the piano and sang. And, yeah, they had a band way back before all of us kids were born. And then they kind of put it away to raise us children. So, but music has always been in my house. And, God, my grandpas and their brothers and sisters, everybody was into music.
Now, in the mid-50s, I'm assuming you started to become influenced yourself by some of the biggest names in rhythm and blues. Music was pretty white at the time, and the names that I've heard you mention before and in your book really must have broke through to you. Very powerful voices in music.
Well, yeah, you know, I was a 15-year-old boy, and, you know, pop music was great, and it was wonderful at the time, but, boy, the first time I heard Little Richard, I said, wow, what the heck is that?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I love that, and then probably when I was about 18 or 19, got hip to Ray Charles and Bobby Blue Bland, B.B. King, and all that stuff, and both Bobby and I, the Righteous Brothers, were heavily, heavily influenced with rhythm and blues, and you know, it's just it was just a, you know, a different level. You know, it was emotional, and I'm an emotional singer, and don't know if it comes across.
Oh,
that
yeah,
way,
it does. Oh, yeah, it does.
But I am, and boy, the motion of Ray Charles and all those guys just opened up my world and my soul. And gave me a reason to, I didn't necessarily say, man, I'm going to dive into that. It just happened, you know, it washed over me. I'm 76 and still doing it.
I love it. I love it. Well, your voice, you know, Bill, so synonymous with that sound of rhythm and blues. And it was a natural gift. I mean, you really didn't do much training. I mean, that voice was always there for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, when I was 15, I was about 5'3", 5'4", mm-hmm. and I was a first tenor. You know, I was sang real high. And so I got, you know, with the Platters and all that stuff, I really got that into my brain because I used to sing that and sing up there. And then, you know, in one year I grew 7 inches and my voice went from first tenor to baritone or wherever the heck it is.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing.
So I've been blessed.
Yeah, you absolutely have. When you started, you know, you're talking about when you were in your teen years, you put together some groups, the Romancers, the Paramours, and almost 55 years ago formed the Righteous Brothers with Bobby Hatfield. How did that all come together, you and Bobby?
Well, a friend of ours, John Wimber, who went on to be a big, big minister and opened up churches all over the world, he was working in Las Vegas. Of course, this was before he was a Christian. And he was working Vegas and had a real successful band and this and that. And he just got tired of it. And he was from Orange County, where Bobby and I were from. And he knew about Bobby because of Bobby's older brother, and he knew about me. So he wanted to come back to Orange County and put together a band that would, you know, work constantly. And so he took Bobby and Bobby's drummer and myself and my guitar player and put us all together. And we worked about 6 months as as the Paramours. And then I wrote a song called Little Latin Loopy Lou.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Orange County was very white, but there was there at the time, but there was a Marine base there, El Toro Marine base. And some of the black Marines heard that there was these two guys down at the club singing rhythm and blues. And they would come by, you know, if you had a neat car or this and that, they'd call it a righteous car, which meant good. Boy, that's a righteous car.
Yeah.
And they would call it, and if they liked you as a friend, they'd call you a brother. So a lot of times when we were coming to work, they'd say, hey, righteous brother, how you doing? So
wow.
When we recorded Little Latin Loopy Lou, we needed a name. So we used the name that the Marines were calling us.
I love it.
Very
oh,
proud of that.
Great yeah. story. Absolutely. And I think Moonglow was the first label as the Righteous Brothers that signed you up. I think it was later bought by Warner Brothers. That must have been a pretty big deal because that was pretty quick that you got a record deal.
Yeah, we actually got the record deal while we were still the Paramours and working that little nightclub. And they oddly enough, it was a little Mickey Mouse Orange County recording company and a record company. And but, you know, what did we know? We said, well, yeah, let's do Loopy Lou. And then Phil Spector came along, God bless him, and asked Barry Mann and Cynthia Wilde to write a song for us. And they wrote You've Lost That Love and Feeling. And, boy.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing to me because I didn't know this fact that it has been the most played song in American radio history. And when you performed that song for the first time, you know, 50 years ago, did you know, I mean, how powerful that song was even at the time?
No, it's really interesting. And I have to give, you know, Phil Spector all the credit. When they first started singing it to us, Barry Mann and Phil Spector were singing it, and they had these real high, thin voices. And so the song was really written to be, you never close your eyes anymore, you know, but I couldn't get a, you lost that, I couldn't get that high note. So they would lower it, and every time they would lower it, Phil slowed it down to, you never close your, you know.
Yeah.
And it just became an entirely different song. And we loved it, but we knew it couldn't be a hit because it was way too long for those days, you know?
Yeah.
Well, we beat the odds. But
yeah, you did. You really
Hello.
Did. Hello.
Somebody didn't. Yeah, somebody went their own way with that. But, yeah, it was a little over 4 minutes. And in those days, records had to be about, you know, two and a half.
Yeah, it was a shorter record. Yeah, much shorter. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the disc jockeys, God bless you guys, they said it was our bathroom break. So.
Yeah, that's about as much time as you would get on the air. You're totally right. Yeah, you're totally right. Totally right. Well, we are talking with music legend Bill Medley, and there's more with Bill next on 720 WGN.
Now I had the time of my life. No, I never felt like this before. Yes, I swear it's a truth, and I owe it all to you.
'Cause I had the time of my life, and I owe it all to you.
It is Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're hanging out with Grammy Award-winning Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Bill Medley of the Righteous Brothers. Very early on in your career, you had Elvis come to see you guys. Did you know when you were performing that he was in the audience at the time, or did you only find out after?
Well, you know, way back there when we were doing Loopy Lou and it was like two different careers. We were doing just kind of kick and rock and roll, rhythm
clubs.
And blues. And
yeah,
and he would come in with his boys, but no, we never knew until after the show.
Wow.
And yeah,
that releases some pressure.
You better not know he was there. And but I can remember one time I had to sing Georgia with Ray Charles in the audience.
Wow.
And I knew he was in the audience.
Wow.
And I still haven't shaken that off. But Yeah, Elvis was a good friend, and he used to come in and see me when I, like, I left the Righteous Brothers in 68.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he would come into the Sands Hotel and see me all the time. And, you know, that's when Elvis Presley, nobody ever saw Elvis. You know, he was like the Howard Hughes of rock and roll.
Yeah, yeah.
So he just became a real good friend and a great guy.
You were also the opening act for the Beatles' first American tour. How crazy was that?
Well, crazy is a good word, word for it, man. I mean, you know, I guess the Beatles asked, you know, for us to go on the tour, and we didn't know who the Beatles were. And,
right.
You know,
really
a lot of America didn't.
No.
Yeah. So we said, well, okay. So we, you know, we did it, and man, and even the Beatles were just absolutely amazed the reaction of the audience and all that. And the truth is all the screaming and yelling through the songs really kind of bothered them. You know, they wanted to be heard. They wanted to perform. They wanted to do the songs. But it was great, and they were great guys, and we left the tour about midway through. We went to Brian Epstein and say, listen, we have an offer to do a TV show at home. Do you think it would be okay to leave the tour?
Was that Shindig?
And he said, please.
Was that Shindig at the time?
Yeah, Shindig.
Yeah.
So we went back to do the, you know, the pilot for Shindig, and you know, every wrong thing we did just absolutely turned out right.
Yeah, really. So little right place, right time on some of this, and great decisions along the way. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
With all that fame that was happening over the years, Bill, was, you know, I know, and you know, I read your book, so I kind of know this, but you were a little bit more of the driving force behind really, you know, growing your audience and getting out there and live performance and everything. A little bit more engaged than Bobby was. Was he not into making it as big as you saw it to be at that time?
Well, you know, so we had two different careers, and the first career was just two dumb guys out there singing our brains out, and you know, and getting paid more than we should, and this and that, and then, and so it was just fun. I mean, there was no pressure. It was just fun. And then Love and Feeling came along and became a hit. Well, that just made, and Shindig, that just made us really nationally known. And Bobby wasn't as comfortable with that, you know. And which was, you know, no big deal, but it was a little tough because I was kind of driven and produced a lot of the stuff and this and that. And yeah, Bobby would have been more comfortable if our career just stayed as two young rock and roll singers.
Gotcha.
And maybe I would have too.
We never know.
Yeah.
You mentioned one of the reasons you think you lasted so long beyond the string of hit records is that you understood the live performances had to be more than just standing there and singing. So you're in the recording studio, you're making great music, you're recording new albums. Did you really enjoy being, and do you continue to love being right in front of your audience and performing live and really putting your heart and soul into that?
Yeah, the two greatest things in our industry, if you're an artist, is being in the studio and creating. I mean, that's the coolest thing in the world. And then the next thing is being on stage with that energy and the energy of the audience. And the truth is, man, they don't pay me to do the show. They pay me to travel.
Gotcha.
You know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I just love being on stage. And I love, especially in these days, you know, we really get to hear a lot of the stories of how our music influenced people or touched their lives. And it's wonderful. Jesus, it's just wonderful.
I bet. No, I bet it is. I think, you know, I was born in 67, so I think the first time I saw you on television live performing was on Bandstand. I think it was the 30th anniversary of Bandstand when you got together together with Bobby. And it was right really before the dawn of MTV. So Bandstand was really on television, still the music show. You wanted to throw some hits out there. Dick Clark was the guy to see, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Dick Clark was the guy, and just a wonderful, wonderful guy. And, I mean, Dick Clark and Ed Sullivan, that was it.
That was true.
And, now today there's a lot of different avenues, and the music industry's changed so much, you know, it seems like it was easier back then, but I don't know. I think there's probably more avenues for kids to get their stuff heard and this and that than back there in the 60s. But
really
artistic.
There's something to be said for that with social media and YouTube and everything. But I'll tell you, when you really only had three or four channels back in the 60s and 70s and half to two-thirds of the audience was watching the same show, you know, you had great exposure back then. You really did.
Well, it was phenomenal exposure. If you were lucky enough to be one of the acts that they wanted on your show.
Yeah, right.
But if you're not, there's only three shows.
Right. That's true. Okay, that's true.
So it's good news and bad news.
Yeah, right. Shortly after that, about 5-6 years later, and you did so many solo albums as well throughout the last 50 years, but I've Had the Time of My Life, Dirty Dancing came along. How did that all happen?
Well, Jimmy Einer from New York had called me, and I've done a million songs for movies, and I think I just kind of have one of those voices that resonates with, grabs their attention, or so I don't know.
Sure. Oh yeah.
I won't brag.
No, I'm with you, brother.
Jimmy Einer called me and said, "Listen, I'm getting ready to I'm putting together the music for a movie, and I want you to sing the title, title song or a song for the movie." And I said, "Well, what movie is it?" He says, "It's Dirty Dancing." And in those days, it sounded like a bad porno movie.
Even these days, but yeah, exactly.
Even these days, yes. I said, "Oh man, I don't." I said, "Well, who's in it?" And he said, "Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey." And this was before they made it, so I said, "Well, who's that?"
Yeah, who's that exactly?
And
yeah.
and my wife Paula was just getting ready to have our child, McKenna, who's now 30, going to be 31, and is on stage.
And she's performing.
Time of My Life.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And so I turned it down. I turned it down for 3 months. I said, I promised my wife I would be, at the birth of my child, and that's what I want to do. But he just kept calling and calling. He said, "Has she had the baby yet?" And I told my wife, "Have the kid. I need a hit run." She had our child, and they said, "Well, Jennifer Warnes wants to sing it if she can sing it with you." And Jimmy Einer was just so sure that my voice should have been the voice for Patrick Swayze in that movie. Jennifer and I actually did the song just to sing together, just so that it would be a great experience. And who knew, man?
Yeah.
The little movie that could.
Oh, yeah. Grammy. The song won an Academy Award. I mean, this truly was the time of your life. It was big. Yeah.
Yeah. Every award it was up for, or Jennifer and I were up for, we won.
Yeah.
It was
powerful
just,
song,
just remarkable, and the album I think sold 32 million or something.
Oh yeah, I still have it on vinyl somewhere. Yeah.
Of all the stupid things I do, I keep falling into it.
I love it. No, that's great. That's great. And then a few years later, Unchained Melody back on the big screen in Ghost. And then over a decade later, you and Bobby inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame by Billy Joel. How much impact being inducted into the Hall? What did that mean to you?
Well, it meant a great deal because it really kind of is saying, yeah, you were in the business, you mattered, you made a change, and it's just, it's good to be, you know, recognized by your peers, and we were just thrilled to death with it, and it was funny that when we did the show, Elton John and Steve Tyler and Sting and the whole, you just never know how much you influence these people, or, you know, you just don't know until you know.
Until you're in front of them, and they tell you.
It was a phenomenal night, and what a great honor, you know. So, yeah, it was funny because, well, not funny, but Bobby, we went in March of 2003, and Bobby passed away. And,
you just know, months later.
November of the same year.
Yeah.
So, boy.
I'm glad he got to do it with you.
Oh, you know? God, it was wonderful, yes.
And last year, and I know it's been a long time since you've gone on stage as a righteous brother, so to speak, since Bobby passed away. What was it that motivated you to bring the group as the Righteous Brothers back on stage with Bucky Hurd?
Well, I think I was probably 75 or 76 at the time, and Harrah's in Las Vegas wanted me to do a residency job there, and I kind of didn't want to do it as Bill Medley, and I've had a lot of people after me to put the Righteous Brothers back together. You can't replace Bobby Hatfield. He was just one of the great singers that come out of the 60s. And so I wasn't really keen on it until I ran into Bucky, and we had been friends for about 14 years. And he was the perfect guy, and never mind vocally. He's just an incredible singer, but we just have always had so much fun together, and I just knew, because it was a lot like Bobby. Bobby and I just had a lot of fun together. We were both young, dumb, and full of rum. You know what I mean? But so I kind of put it back together, you know, to go do the Vegas thing, and now we're out doing concerts and all kinds of stuff, and it's been remarkably successful.
I mean, the chemistry, and I've seen some of it online too, the chemistry between the two of you is truly fabulous, and I think it is a nice tribute to Bobby and you and Bobby as the Righteous Brothers having these songs back on stage together.
Yeah, and you know, I know that the driving force behind, you know, us doing so well, we know that it's the songs, you know, that people want to hear those songs, and they want to relive those memories, you know.
Sure.
You know, in the early days, it was, I want to go see Bob and Bill, and but today I think it's, well, I'll go see Bill, but I'd really like to hear those songs.
Well, are you surprised that so many years, I mean, we're talking 50, 60 years on some of these songs, are you surprised that they have still such an amazing impact on the audience and different generations of the audience?
Yeah, well, it's just, it's staggering. I mean, you know, I recorded them, and, you know, when I was 24 and 25, and here I am 75, and I'm still singing the same songs.
And sound fabulous, you know, by the way, and sound fabulous.
Thank you, man. So, yeah, I mean, it's a blessing. Somebody said, when are you going to retire? I said, I got to get a job first. You know, this ain't work, man. This is a 15-year-old boy's dream.
You never retire from what you love doing, Bill.
No, you don't do it.
You don't do it. You don't. And I can't wait to see you again. Saturday, July 29th, the venue at the Horseshoe Casino. For tickets, you can go to Ticketmaster.com, and it's an amazing venue for a concert. And for more on Bill and what's going on with him, you can follow him on Facebook. Bill, a thrill to spend some time with you, and we look forward to you coming back to Chicago, my friend.
Well, I can't wait to do it. We'll be there, and if you come down, make sure you come backstage and yell at me.
I'll do that. Okay, I'll do that. Thanks again, Bill, man. Have a great night.
Thank you, man.
All right, much more ahead on 720 WGN.